Hello and welcome to The Stoochie, the politics podcast from DC Thompson Media. My name is Paul Malik. I'm joined this week by Adele Merson and Callum Morse to discuss all things Scottish politics. This week, we have been following the travails of the anointment of the new Lord Advocate of Scotland and whether or not we almost ran out of PPE last year. Let's get cracking straight into it. Adele, you've been covering the Lord Advocate story. Tell us a little bit through it and why it's such an historic appointment.
Yes, Paul. So Nicola Sturgeon picked her top law officers this week. She nominated Dorothy Bain QC, and she will replace James Wolfe as Lord Advocate, and Ruth Charteris will become the Solicitor General for Scotland. So those are the two sort of top legal positions in Scotland. As you say, it is a historic occasion because it is the first one in which both those two roles have been held by women at the same time. So there was some mention of that in the chamber and the hope that that would, do good things for more equal representation. Of course, the role is one that has become, the role of Lord Advocate is one that has become increasingly significant in recent months off the back of the current Lord Advocate was embroiled in that battle between the Scottish Government and Alex Salmond over the government's handling of harassment complaints against him. And it was around then that really heated up and people began to call for that role. Basically, the Lord Advocate holds a dual role. So they are both head of the prosecution service in Scotland, but also the chief legal advisor to the Scottish Government. So Nicola Sturgeon, she confirmed yesterday that they will be reviewing that. It was something I believe was in their manifesto. She said there's a strong case to be made to reform the role, but that they need to work on, I guess, what the sort of precise detail of that will be, and that the government will take forward a consultation in due course. That's something that's supported across the, you know, most parties now have said that they would be in favour of that role being split in half. Douglas Ross of the Conservatives said that there is a serious conflict between the two roles, and some of the other parties made the point that sometimes it's not just whether there is bias, but also whether there could be a perception of possible bias. And they said it's important to look at reforming this role, you know, so it has the support, kind of restores public confidence, I guess, off the back of what's been quite a test in time for that role.
There's a couple of things you could point out about that. Is it traditionally fair to say that the role, unless you were some sort of, you know, politics nerd like us, that you wouldn't really know who the Lord Advocate was? And it's just recently, because of the whole stramash over Salmond and Sturgeon and the role that the Lord Advocate has played in that, that they've become more visible. And I suppose the second point I want to point out is that she is already a legal big hitter. She's had some big cases, hasn't she, that she's worked on and really made a name for herself in the Scottish legal world. Can you talk us through some of the things that she's done, you know, that she's become, she's earned her stripes with?
Yeah, so on your first one, yeah, I mean, it's hard for us sometimes to comment on that because we are we're very much enmeshed in all this, and so we do know these people. But yeah, I'd have to guess that the Lord Advocate is not a household name in a lot of people's homes, but is actually, obviously, I've just told you there about the dual role, is a hugely significant and important role. And so therefore, off the back of the increased sort of press attention, I wouldn't be surprised if going forward more people are aware of what the Lord Advocate does and are watching closely for how Dorothy Bain will get on. I mean, it is important to say that she will have a role in a sort of independence referendum discussions that take place and giving legal advice to the government on that. And so that will mean that, I guess, that she, you know, she will remain in the headlines for that at least. And yes, as you say, she's got a really impressive CV. She is a former, she formerly has acted in lots of high profile cases. One that was mentioned quite frequently was she was involved in the prosecution of serial killer Peter Tobin. And she also represented one of the victims in the Glasgow bin lorry crash from 2014. And you know, news that it was going to be her taking the role kind of broke early on in the week. And I think all the sort of reaction from politicians and I guess other sort of legal figures has been kind of unanimous that they think she's someone of the highest integrity and that she's somebody that really puts victims sort of front and centre, that she has a great deal of empathy. And so I think in the chamber yesterday, lots of the MSPs seemed to have quite high hopes that the victim would be front and centre now, that there was a reason to believe that things might sort of, that might be a good thing for the representation of victims in Scotland. So there's certainly, she's got a highly impressive CV and high expectations, I guess, awaiting her.
And you touched upon the independence question. I mean, I think it looks now that, similar to what happened with Brexit, that any sort of independence referendum or any granting of a Section 30 order or whatever process that we go through is going to be met and challenged in court quite a lot. I think there was a precedent set with the High Court cases the court session in the High Courts and the Supreme Courts down south, with all the back and forth over Brexit on there. Is there any suggestion that she would be sort of in favour of holding another referendum, or is that something we just wouldn't be able to find out, because that's just why she's good at her job?
Yeah, I mean, we don't know exactly. That I noticed that the Times, they had reported that legal sources had told them that she was likely to give the referendum bill the green light if she was installed as the senior legal advisor. So I don't know who the sources are, but that's certainly been reported this week. But I think all eyes will be on her for what she's going to decide on that one.
Very interesting indeed. Now, Callum, another story that came up this week, which seems to be rearing its head again, is there was an Audit Scotland report on PPE preparedness and the Scottish Government's levels that they had, which you were taking a look at. It follows on from stories that you were working on earlier during the pandemic about the amount of personal protective equipment that our nurses and frontline workers, like carers and doctors, had. And it seems that we almost ran out. Is that fair to say?
Oh, that's right, Paul. I mean, we all remember, of course, PPE being one of the big controversies during the pandemic, especially kind of the early wave, the first wave around kind of spring last year. When we heard, you know, we heard reports often of frontline health and care staff, like you say, having to work without appropriate safety equipment or kind of equipment that was out of date and had the expiry date kind of changed several times, and in some cases essentially putting their lives on the line, I suppose, as a result of those issues. And I think there's no doubt about it, it's going to be one of the big issues that's considered at the next, or at the inquiry into the government's handling of the pandemic, whenever that gets up and running, alongside, you know, things like protections for care homes and the decisions that led to hospital patients being moved into such facilities. Now, in PPE, I mean, the Scottish Government has always made clear that no point did we run out of supplies of PPE. But, you know, this Audit Scotland report yesterday made it clear that we did come perilously close to doing so in terms of some key items. I mean, the watchdog found that in April last year, the nation's central stockpile of long sleeve gowns had less than a day's supply left at one point. That's, you know, just a few hours basically before we ran out of central stocks of these gowns. There was one day's worth of these FFP3 respirator masks, and only enough visors to last 2 days. I mean, the report, it's important to be clear, the report did acknowledge that this was a worldwide issue, and, you know, those numbers talk about central stockpiles. There were kind of further supplies stored locally by NHS boards, for example, and also the situation was changing daily. But, you know, Supplies did get very low at one stage. Stephen Boyle, the Auditor General for Scotland, though, I mean, he was clear that the Scottish Government and NHS National Services of Scotland had worked well together under extremely challenging circumstances to set up new arrangements for the supply and distribution of PPE to health and social care settings. But the government was also criticised in the report for not fully implementing the recommendations on PPE in its which came out of its kind of planning exercises for a pandemic. So I mean, the government knew that had been told as a result of these planning exercises that there could be issues with some PPE supplies, and it was kind of highlight. This was kind of highlighted.
Were these warnings ignored then? Were they overlooked? Or
that was the point made by Scottish Labour leader Anna Sarwar when he raised the report at First Minister's Questions yesterday. I mean, he exactly that. He said that these warnings were ignored and that the government was unprepared as a result. Nicola Sturgeon kind of responding. I mean, she recognised that there were issues with some of the preparations for the pandemic. I mean, I think we all know that. We all saw it kind of unfold at the time. And you know, it's happened pretty much every government in the world. The First Minister also said that there were lessons had been learned, essentially, in terms of supply chains, and that the majority of PPE is now kind of locally produced rather than imported. The majority of PPE was imported before the pandemic, but that's changed already.
There was a lot of local companies sort of stepping up or changing what they produce, wasn't it? I know there was a few in our patch down in Forfar that sort of altered what they made. And
yeah, that's right. I mean, there's a huge effort. I mean, I think across Britain let me see. No, I'm just looking at the report again here just now. The NHS National Services Scotland distributed 1.1 billion items of PPE between March 2020 and April 2021, and you know, when you think about that, that's just incredible volumes. And like you say, a lot of those were kind of companies that kind of stepped up when they were needed. Also by companies who made money, other companies as well. I mean, another aspect that came out in the report was that if the government had bought a lot of this PPE before the pandemic, they would have saved a lot of money. I think £37 million less than they ended up spending on PPE in the first 5 months of the pandemic. So that was another kind of issue that was raised in terms of how the way preparations could essentially have been better for the pandemic.
Any suggestion that was companies scalping the government, or is it just because of the quick need and the quick turnaround that's what added to the extra cost? Is that mentioned in the report at all?
I mean, I don't think the Audit Scotland report got into that in any great detail. It was more obviously the economy of it all changed after the pandemic hit. There's huge demand worldwide for PPE, and so you know the prices of these things changed as governments everywhere were kind of trying to get hold of this equipment. And also, you know, our frontline workers needed the PPE there and then. You know, that would have forced the government to act quickly, and then you know there might have been less kind of consideration of how much things were costing, and there might have been a less kind of intense times. But that, I mean, that's me kind of my commentary on it. That's not necessarily what came out in the report.
So a nice short show this week. We've just wrapped up the big issues of what we've had to talk about in Scottish politics this week. It is approaching the end of term. Next Friday, Scottish politicians will vacate Holyrood and take up work, I'm sure, in their constituencies. They're not on summer holiday, although it is happening during the summer. So I know I promised it last week, but I made a mess of my diary, so I do apologise. But your end of term special will be coming next Friday, where we'll discuss just what's happened in the probably the most strangest of years. issues in politics, certainly in my lifetime and probably yours too. So please do join us for that. You can get the Stooshie on all of your good and bad podcast providers. I'm Paul Malik. Thanks to Del Callum, producers Chris and Morvin. And we'll see you same time next week. Goodbye.
The Stooshie is the politics podcast from DC Thompson Media, bringing together political journalists and commentators from all over the country so that you can be better briefed. Teams at The Courier, The Press and Journal, The Evening Telegraph, Evening Express and The Sunday Post work hard day and night, online, in print and beyond, to bring you careful reporting and analysis designed to help you understand the implications of what happens in Holyrood, in Westminster and in our communities. So you don't miss an episode, follow The Stooshie today on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you know folk like you who want to understand politics in Scotland a little better, suggest they tune into The Stooshie or follow Stooshie Scott on Twitter and Facebook. You can get a free month of unlimited access to The Courier or The Press and Journal too. Just go to thecourier.co.uk/subscribe or pressandjournal.co.uk/subscribe. Or follow the links in the episode notes to be better briefed. Check the episode notes for details and terms.